What I hope to inspire with the work that I do is the value that lies within our bodily experiences with our physical world. So it's very much about understanding how infinitely valuable and information dense and dataful our being in this world and environment is. And I think working with these extended reality models is a very, very little tiny fractions of trying to understand by creating and challenging that oneself, how that construction of that reality happens.
Hello and welcome to the Culture and Technology Podcast, brought to you by the Vienna Business Agency. My name is Severin Matosek. I'm a writer and researcher based in Berlin, and today's guest is Paula Strunden. Paula is an architectural designer who builds extended reality models. I was curious to talk to Paula because I believe we often think of virtual reality as this experience happening inside our brains. We put on a pair of 3D glasses and we enter a different world, completely zoned out. But what is the role of our body in that experience? And physical space? Could all of those be merged into one immersive, virtual and physical experience altogether? I met with Paula to discuss how this might look like and learn about her approach in designing extended reality experiences. Welcome to the podcast, Paula.
Thank you very much.
Can you please introduce yourself?
I'm Paula Strunden. I'm a VR artist and I'm trained as an architect. So I come from a spatial design background. And in the last years, I've been doing my PhD research at the Academy of Fine Arts in Vienna, which is a practice-based research as part of a bigger European research project for which I've been developing a series of extended reality installations.
So today we're going to talk about virtual worlds and extended reality. I have lots of questions for you. But I would like to start with a question that you recently started a presentation of yourself with, which was, why is there so much fuss about virtual worlds not being real when we can experience genuine emotions and sensations within them? This is a question I've been asking myself many times because I absolutely agree that being in virtual worlds, whether that was video games or metaverse experiences, I absolutely felt real connections and real emotions. But at the same time, I realized myself when talking, you know, about virtual worlds, it's kind of like a degraded reality. We don't take it as seriously as our physical embodied world. So why is that? What's your answer to that question?
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the way of how we are being presented virtual reality experience or any kind of extended reality experiences. And I think for me, the question or why I put it in front of my last presentation was due to a very specific thing that happened in one of my exhibitions. So I built an installation that was exhibited in the Netherlands in Eindhoven. It's called Rhetorical Bodies. And the idea is that there are two people who put on two VR headsets and they wear all these inflatable body parts. So they kind of, go into the virtual world and collect their bodies and then get to meet each other. I always got some little feedbacks from the people who were guiding others through the experience. And then one day they told me that there is this friend of a couple who had come to see the experience. One of her friend fell in love within that world. And I was so shocked by this. Yeah, it was a very sweet message. And I don't know if I was shocked by it because, of course, when I develop these environments, there's a lot of, emotion and there's a lot of kind of meaning that you put as a creator. But for two others to actually fall in love within that environment and feel so strongly about each other to that extent was a very, very kind of strong sensation that could very clearly be communicated also, because very often the problem within these worlds is that they are experience based and highly subjective and it's very personal what happens within them, that we have difficulties communicating what we are experiencing. And I think in something like love, we can relate to, even if we have very little words to describe it. So I think these experiences, they often turn around kind of, genuine sensations or emotions that are of course embedded in the way how we bodily perceive these environments. So everything that we do is in them, what we hear, what we see, but also how we move, if we touch something, how that feels to us, if we feel scared or shocked or comforted, or if it makes us feel calm. Like all these things are, of course, very real. So when once we go inside these worlds, we, of course, continue being within our bodies, our experience being mediated through our bodies once we are inside.
I'm curious about your opinion on this subjective experience, because this is something I noticed when I was researching your work prior to this podcast, where I felt like when I look at your exhibitions and installations, I can see the documentation of the outside world, of the embodiment in the physical world. But then you mostly see people with VR headsets and you can't look inside their experience. You can't look inside their brains. So I felt it might be even difficult to you as an artist to document your work because it's so based on subjective experiences versus, I would say, in the physical world, of course, we all have very personal subjective experiences, but we still share that same physical space together. So how do you deal with these subjective experiences and the documentation or the experience of it?
I think it's definitely a big challenge how to communicate these things in the same way that it's really difficult for us to communicate our dreams or our thoughts. And because these experiences, I use a term of co-creation. So I believe that they are being created in that moment between you that goes inside and the objects and the things that you interact with and the worlds and the spaces that are being created. And of course, a lot of that experience already comes with you. So it is within your memories or within your projections and the way how we see the world and even our physical world, of course, is very different from one to another. And because, within our physical environment, we have developed language and ways of kind of dealing with that and communicating. When you recreate something or when you kind of, simulate something, and also, of course, if you are the maker yourself, you realize how much that differs. So when I have conversations with people coming out of these experiences, everybody tells me different things. Like they see different things. They even see things I have never put inside. They experience, they memorize things I don't know about. And that depends on so many different variables and like factors that go into somebody's experience. And I think because of that, it is very difficult to communicate it. And I think a simple screen recording of what is being seen through the stereoscopic vision of the VR headset is a very limited perspective. So I often experience that in an exhibition setting, for example, even if you project what the person sees that is currently immersed. So for example, they come with a partner or somebody else comes in. Often the other person says, I don't need to go inside. I've seen where this person has gone to. And then, I don't know, maybe they're being convinced then by the person coming out that they still go inside, and then they go inside. And then the person who has just been says, yeah, but I didn't do that. I didn't go there. I didn't see that. I didn't. So even within the same moment, within the same, I don't know, half an hour, two people have extremely different experience and they don't even believe in their own experience that they had. So it's a bit, it's really difficult to describe an experience that happens in a moment in which you are immersed within your own thoughts and maybe also, the memories you have. And then in way or kind of interaction, maybe that you're not so used to yet, that has its own logic and that creates its own world and narrative that is, I think, in its core, interactive and immersive. And I think two-dimensional, kind of audiovisual representations are very difficult to capture that. Or there's maybe not a format that integrates this dimensionality of interaction because, I think this bodily component and this bodily component on like a sensorial level that goes beyond just the audiovisual is really difficult to capture.
I think the comparison to dreams seems to me very powerful in a way, because like I could tell you about a dream that I dreamt last night, but you will never feel it and you will never experience it and it will never have the same meaning that it probably did to me if it was an important dream. So I'm also curious about the history of VR, because this is something that you studied and you currently research, especially with the female pioneers of VR. Could you give a brief historic overview of when did VR first come up? What are the defining inventions maybe? How did it develop over the last few decades? And why is it important to look at female pioneers, especially in that process?
Yeah, as part of my PhD, I've been developing a platform called XR Atlas. So this is online participatory platform that everybody can contribute to. And the idea of that is to expand the history of the technology, because something I realized, of course, you can Google the history of virtual reality or the history of virtual technologies, and you will find many black and white pictures of computer engineers, scientists, often male figures. There's people like Morton Heilig or even Sutherland. So these are the inventors of the first devices that create stereoscopic vision that we now refer to as historical devices and virtual reality. But what I think is really important to expand that understanding and say that the idea of virtuality or virtual experience is much older than a device that is being used to experience a certain kind of audiovisual experience. And I think, for example, in architecture, we have frescoes, we have trousse d'oeil, we have all kind of different forms of paintings or inventions of ways of seeing in different ways in fine arts. In theater, I think we come very close to highly immersive experiences. Of course, in media arts, but then also in literature, there are many examples of experiences that create that sense of highly immersive presence where your whole body is involved and kind of, co-creating this narrative. And I think it is really important to expand the kind of the dominant history that we're being told. And I think especially to expand this idea that this is a new phenomena or a new invention or something that has only been come up since, the first kind of consumer headset came out in 2014, which is the Oculus Quest, which is, has been bought by company we now refer to as Meta, and is of course very much dominating also the way of how we perceive this. One thing that I very quickly realized when I started the PhD is that just because we kind of tell the histories through the perspective of the devices and computer scientists and engineers who develop them, it doesn't mean that there's not a huge breadth of experience that very much looks into what could be done with this technology. So the whole content development that is very experimental, that's very speculative, also highly multi-sensory and really challenges these devices as interfaces and integrate the body, that was developed, or a lot of these works were developed in the late 80s, beginning 90s, and a lot of them were developed by female artists, actors, spatial designers. So it was quite an interdisciplinary field, and this is often undermined. And I think this is really important to reinvest in. And it is a very inspiring kind of breadth of knowledge that actually comes out of that time.
Can you give an example from the late 80s, early 90s, an artwork or an experience that stood out to you personally that maybe was kind of visionary in the way where it was back then?
Yeah, one is from Shar Davis, which is interactive installation, an immersive, full body immersive experience from 1994, which is called Osmosi. And there a person would be putting on a headset, but not only a headset, but also interface that would measure your breathing. So depending on whether you breathed in or you breathed out, you would go down into the world or you would rise up within the virtual world. So you would navigate your virtual world by breathing, which is, of course, very non-controlling, non-active, non-kind of dominating within that world. So in comparison to having a controller or a keyboard or giving an input that is very clear or very one and zero, this is a much more softer, much more present feeling interface. I imagine, I haven't experienced it myself. So I'm really interested also in, recreating possibilities to re-experiencing the works from that time. And so Shar Davis would be one example. Then there's a work by, for example, Brenda Laurel and Rachel Strickland that is about collaboration and also about the relation you have to your natural interfaces, where, for example, you would have physical stones laying around the play area, and you would be able to leave voice messages within them. There would be different kind of creatures that you could embody, taking different roles in the way how then you would be communicating with the other person. So one field is the kind of, yeah, the development of works that were questioning the interfaces or like the role of the body within them. And the other thing is texts that were written about it. So there are a few texts by, for example, there's one by an architecture theoretician, Karen F. Frank, that was entitled "When I Enter Virtual Reality, What Body Will I Leave Behind?" Or one by Catherine Hales, who's like a postmodernist yeah, literature critic, or he's looking a lot into the relationship between our bodies and technology, who wrote an chapter also in 1994 called Embodied Virtuality, or How to Put the Body Back into the Picture. So this idea that our body is kind of left out of the equation when thinking about virtual or augmented or extended reality interfaces has been very aware already, like, yeah, quarter of a decade ago. So I think this is really something that is super crucial to get back into the conversation. And it's something that I think in art and performance and theater has been quite present. And I think in a more kind of, yeah, commercial application that is focused more on like an entertaining or gaming field is being neglected to a certain extent. And I think this has very much influenced the way on how we experience VR or what it has, which potential it kind of seemed to have to us.
So would you say with these early artistic examples, I would say there's a narrative within virtual reality and technology that says, well, the technology isn't there yet, but soon it's going to be there. Like, we just need a better headset, a more powerful headset, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, very soon the Apple headset is going to come out. Well, probably by the moment people listen to this podcast, it's already out. So we'll see what happens then. But of course, there are technological developments that make virtual reality seem more real and 3D graphics more alive, etc. But I think, especially with the examples that you gave now, it's not just about technology. It's about more the imagination and the conception of what to do in these spaces and how to feel them. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I personally work with an old headset. I don't use the latest technology. I don't feel that this is necessary to create certain kind of experiences. From the background that I come from, being trained as a spatial designer and being an artist and a researcher, it is much more interesting to think and speculate upon and experiment with the potential to debate the risks and think about what it actually means for our bodies and our brains and our minds to be immersed within these worlds, to communicate in whole different ways. I think the interesting thing about this is the conversations that we have about it and the way on how we can kind of use it. To me, as an artist, this has very little to do with the development of the devices. I think where it has to do with it is within having a critical position and having an understanding and, of course, being aware of them being developed by companies with a certain agenda. So I think the role of kind of teaching and about creating an awareness about that, and also of agency and like being able to increase kind of, yeah, accessibility to them and increase the kind of people who actually, yeah, contribute to them or like kind of challenge the content. And I think this is really important, but whether it is this or that device, I think, or I don't know, it has that amount of pixel or that kind of field of view, or this does not really matter to me personally. So I think what is key is what we do with it and what kind of conversations we can have through that, and how potentially certain experiences allow us to communicate relationships that are very strongly changing through different technologies among ourselves, but also among things, also among our environments, so how we can, yeah, find novel ways to kind of, discuss these things.
I'm curious, you already mentioned your background as an architect and spatial designer, which obviously influences your practice in VR. But was there a specific moment in your life where you thought like, oh, wow, this is interesting. Like, I want to research this. I want to do a PhD about this. What was the igniting moment that made you go into that field?
I was in Paris. This was 2012, 13. So this was before the first commercially viable VR headsets were on the market. I got the brief to develop a VR center in Laval in France, and we Googled it and we didn't find any images. We didn't really know what it was. So we just designed a kind of a concrete slab on Mars, thinking about people not needing any kind of relations to the exterior because they will live in this alternative reality. So I think our understanding was very much defined by kind of a sci-fi idea of it. And it was then in architectural practice where the relation to objects and the relation or the understanding of a certain meaning or like a value of a spatial atmosphere environment was so key, really kind of inspired or drove me into exploring much further. And the moment that I got hooked to it was the moment when I just started taking it apart. So instead of putting the controller into my hand to start strapping it to a chair and having a chair in the world, or instead of seeing my own hand grabbing thing to like taping the leap motion camera to my friend's head and like following her body to another space. So I think the moment then you start making things with it and you don't depend on existing setup, I think that was really for me the moment I got really excited about the potential. So I think the combination of taking the physical thing apart and working within an environment, working within a software that is not commonly used by architects, which is the game engine Unity. So I think to combine the kind of like more spatial or architectural design thinking with a software that comes from gaming, which is very much focused on this potential of interacting and then just not being very careful or being quite experimental with what that meant physically. So to really think of the physical body, the material body and the physical space. And within that combination, I just think there are endless possibilities of exploring how we perceive reality that for me personally are really exciting.
What I'm curious about is exactly this approach to virtual reality that you say it's more than just a one-dimensional sensation. But it's, you know, as with the title of this other talk you gave recently, touching, licking, and tasting the virtual, that I feel like part of your artistic practice is so much to situate the virtual in a full body sensory experience, that the virtual experiences that you create are not just within the headset, but actually contain physical items that you pick up, etc. So could you tell us more about how to bring those multi-dimensional sensory experiences into the virtual world or combining it with virtual worlds?
I think, first of all, what's really important to me is that we understand that spatial perception is multi-sensorial, that there's no spatial perception by just seeing or hearing or just moving. So it's really about the combination of these things. And there's so much more than like the five Aristotelian classical senses. I think what's really interesting about working with virtual reality, or when I use the term virtual reality, but I'm referring to an understanding or to a way of working that combines virtual reality experiences with physical stage setup models. So there's always the presence of real material objects and the actual physical space as a site. So the moment you put on a headset, there's another person, there are things within the room, there's the room itself, there's your own body, there's everything you come with, there's everything the other person comes with. And then you together start entering an experience in which all these things continue to stay present. And to integrate all of that within the design, this is, I think, what makes it so interesting, because then you can integrate not only, what you see and what you hear, but also whatever you will touch, what you smell. Maybe there are things you can taste. There's your sense of, the way how you orientate yourself among the objects, the way how all these things like balance, gravitation, but also your sense of time, your sense of light, like all these senses, of course, they influence the experience you will have. Yeah, it's really important to integrate them all, but not at all in order to recreate or to represent, yeah, the physical reality or room as we know it, but rather to understand how these senses kind of co-create reality in its first place. I think what very quickly happens, for example, in one of the experiences that I build, is you pick up an object, and the moment you pick it up, your vision moves inside the object. So you see by moving your hands. So you can like move your hands from the left to the right, and the space starts turning around you. So there are all these kind of experiences that you create in which you reconnect or recombine the different modalities to each other in order to understand how they construct reality in the first place. I think it's about understanding how our body or how our mind within our body, within the space that we are in, constructs our idea of reality.
I think reality is an interesting concept to talk about, because I would say, especially if we look at the last few years, what the pandemic also effectuated was more and more people working from home, more and more people finding community and connection online, more and more people kind of like constructing a certain sense of reality through the internet, also in terms of conspiracy theories, etc. So would you say that the future might look like that every individual kind of like constructs their own reality, where the physical world is just one part of it, but then maybe another part is just the entire virtual worlds that we create together and that have different experiences, different ways of looking at the world, different ways of moving, sensing, touching. Is that a possible future that you envision?
What I hope to inspire with the work that I do is the value that lies within our bodily experiences with our physical world. So it's very much about understanding how infinitely valuable and information dense and data full our being in this world and environment is. And I think working with these extended reality models is a very, very little tiny fractions of trying to understand by creating and challenging that oneself, how that construction of that reality happens. But the one thing that it brought to me is a huge respect and awe and wonder for everything, the way how we have developed to exist within this world. And I think this is also the kind of findings that from the conversation that with people who are working within that realm, so especially with some of the female pioneers that I've been speaking to, it is very often going back to a very kind of profound and deep understanding of our natural material environment, and to carefully and more empathetically deal with these resources. So I think I'm not spending a lot of time personally within virtual environments. I very much try to minimize the time I spend generally on devices. Of course, that's very difficult within the way how we work nowadays, but I think it is incredibly important to find ways to use these technologies or these developments in order to better connect and communicate and care about each other, also for not only human partners within that, but also any kind of things that we meet and interact with. And by that, I mean animate and inanimate. Somehow these technologies have become part of the things that I get to meet within my work or everyday life. I think it's really important to not put these kind of differentiation or hierarchies between them, but to just try to understand how they kind of coexist or co-create these realities.
So actually, your definition of extended reality or virtual reality, rather than this popular trope of these worlds being an escape from reality, it can actually be the opposite. It can bring us closer to reality and closer to nature, closer to the world we actually live in by experiencing these worlds in various ways.
Yeah, I think by carefully and consciously and critically using them, and also I think it's important to learn to use them and to work with them in order to understand them. I think it's really important as interdisciplinary, broad, diverse kind of people as possible to work with them. And I definitely think that they help us reconnect or re-understand maybe or re-experience things. I think one example maybe that's nice to mention within that context is that for me personally, the work with the technology has very strongly influenced the way how I dream. So I have this meta dream state in which I become conscious of my dream. So it's a bit like lucid dreaming, but in the way that it was dreaming about VR experiences. So there's this like see-through mode on the Oculus. You can take off the headset and then you can see through and see reality. So I started within my dreams to check whether I can take off the headset or not. And when I couldn't, then I started to move my arm or move my leg and realize, okay, no, I'm sleeping. And then being within these dreams and a thought space that would usually be perceived as something that is internal. So a thought or a dream or an emotion we position within our bodies and the kind of physical and environmental we position outside of our bodies. And of course, in this more extended reality setup, this can be turned around. Then suddenly we experience something that we formerly thought to be outside within ourselves. So I think this has quite a strong effect on how we kind of, how we reorganize where we sit within that. And I think it becomes really fluid. So to me, there's a lot of learning about bodily position within an environment and about these borders or boundaries being super dynamic and constantly changing, and these relationships between our bodies, the objects we interact with, the spaces we are immersed in, being much more fluid than we thought. And I think in that sense, there's a really interesting way of maybe not knowing where you are within that, but kind of like anchoring you and re-anchoring you constantly within some kind of like physicality or materiality. So in that sense, I think this idea of escaping reality or overcoming reality or creating an alternative reality is really not so interesting or appealing to me. And I think it's much more exciting to think on how to anchor ourselves within us and things and others, and how to connect or understand new ways.
I think that was a nice way to end the conversation.
Thank you very much.
That was Paula Strunten. You can check out Paula's work at paulastrunten.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, I can highly recommend listening to previous episodes on this podcast with Kaken and Barney Steele, both of which use extended reality in exciting new ways to create experiences. This is the Culture and Technology Podcast, produced by the Vienna Business Agency. The Vienna Business Agency supports new companies, projects, and products that develop Vienna's creative industries further.